My name's Andrew Hunter. I'm the senior curator of the Art Gallery of Guelph, and I'm in Glasgow. I was in London recently, but in Glasgow this week. And I'm here today visiting and meeting with...
I'm Marenka Thompson-Odlam, and I'm in my third and final year of my PhD at the University of Glasgow, and I look at Glasgow and slavery.
So this interview came about through a colleague, Rosie Spooner, who I'm also going to be doing an interview with, and excited to reach out to you because of the work you've been doing. And it feels like, for us at Guelph, a nice kind of continuation and extension of some of the conversations we were having with people doing work in Canada around the erasure of slavery and the history of slavery, and under the title of Black Lives Rooted that I did with Liz Zakirico. First of all, I thought we would just maybe talk a bit about your background and how you came here to Glasgow, because you're not from Glasgow.
No, I'm not from Glasgow. I'm originally from the small Caribbean island of St. Lucia, and actually, I got to Glasgow. It was kind of like kismet. The University of Glasgow and Glasgow Museums, which is basically is an umbrella of like for nine different museums within Glasgow and run by Glasgow Corporation, the city. They put together a joint PhD project, and they wanted to look at the Glasgow Museum's collections, links to the slave trade. And so they applied for funding through the AHRC. And then when they got the funding, then they put the call out for someone to do the PhD. And so I was back home in St. Lucia after doing my master's. And I was home just like kind of not doing much. But actually, funny enough, I was starting to really getting interested into like Scotland and Scotland's connection to the Caribbean, because I always passed this place called Glasgow Hill in St. Lucia. And then there's some old 18th century sugar boilers that have the Carron mark, and Carron is an ironworks in Falkirk, not far from Glasgow. So I'd actually been starting to look at all this, and I've been involved with an exhibition looking at tartan and the tartan diaspora, and so it was all coming together, and I was just really interested, and then this appeared, you know, popped up on, you know, my job search, and I was like, well, this is meant to be, I have to apply. So I applied. I had to get up at 7 o'clock in the morning to do my Skype interview because of the time difference. Mm-hmm. And then an hour later, I got a call saying, you got it, PhD. And yeah, and then a month later, I was on a plane to Scotland.
Yeah. So talk a bit about what's been going on here in Glasgow and in Scotland generally, but maybe particularly in Glasgow, around the engaging with the history that my sense would be, much like in Canada, has not been widely discussed publicly.
So, it's only been maybe the last 10 years that this kind of history is being brought to the forefront by scholars mainly, but also by different groups like Coalition for Racial Equality and Rights, which is an anti-racist charity group that works based in Glasgow. Because they've really been pushing a whole Black History Month as well, so they do a lot of events. But so it's been fairly recent, and you get a lot of pushback, you know, sometimes. People are saying, oh, but there's a whole feeling that Scottish people weren't really slavers because they were oppressed as well, and it's a more focus on the abolition movement that was very strong in Scotland, which kind of everybody remembers, but nobody remembered what came before abolition.
Yeah.
And you still get today a lot, or like the whole idea of Scots also being slaves, even though technically they may have been taken as prisoners or indentured laborers, but they were never actual chattel slavery. Which I think people don't really understand the concept of that, meaning that all your children are born as slaves and you have no legal personhood.
There's a parallel, I think, often in North America where people they'll do things like suggest, well, you know, like Indigenous people had slavery as well, but it's like a complete misunderstanding, like you say, of what chattel slavery was.
And I think every time we give a talk or have any event of such, there's always this. People are very interested. You find people interested, but then there's also a pushback being like, well, you know, and I think, again, it's for a nation that's kind of fashioned itself in the last like 200 years as being like the underdog and like, overcoming, like, you know, kind of this whole Scottish identity. It's very hard for them to then say, well, we were oppressing people as well. So they can no longer look at England as being the bad guy and everything.
Yeah.
So I think that's very and very interesting part of it. And that was, it makes it very tricky to move forward here. Because even politically, like, you know, it's all depends on who's in power also in Scottish politics. Because then you find you have some groups that are less likely to want to take this on and maybe implement it in schools as a part of the school modules. And then there's some that are like, oh, actually, no, this is a part of our history and we will do it. So it's always slightly changing. But actually, I mean, it's been pretty positive so far, I'm going to say, actually. And especially young people seem very interested. But also, I mean, Glasgow is changing so fast and it's a huge BME, a Black Minority Ethnic Community growing in Scotland. And like, they're interested in this.
Right.
And how does their history fit in with Scotland's history as well? So you find a lot more people doing doing stuff, especially a lot of artists and art students. So like Rosie Spooner's art students, they're very interested in kind of exploring this whole new idea of Scotland and empire and slavery. So that's very interesting. The Royal Conservatoire, the students did this whole musical piece inspired by like Runaway Slaves project. They just, and I think Thierry, who also who is a actor and a playwright, he's also putting on a play soon that's been inspired by this history as well. So yeah, a lot of positive responses.
Can you tell in a kind of condensed version the history?
So the history
that we keep referring to, there is a very particular history between this city and the slave trade.
Well, first of all, just say Scots were everywhere.
People, <one of them.
laughs> people don't realize it. But I mean, I mean it's, I think like the Scots were integral to the building and the maintenance of the British Empire. For many reasons, one of them being that they were more well educated than a lot of English people. The literacy rate in Scotland in the 18th century was much higher than that in England. They had more universities for the population. They graduated, I think about, was it 10,000 doctors between 1750 and 1850, which not all of them can be employed within United Kingdom. So what do? They send them out as doctors on slave ships, on plantations, as botanists. So you find most of the most of those medical people that you find out there working within the slave populations are Scottish or Scottish trained. So that's just even one way, you know. And then you also have them being after a Jacobite rebellion in 1745. You have a lot of people leaving Scotland, sometimes not because they're forced out of necessity, and they're leaving, and then you find them in Highland regiments, which are being sent to India, you know, and walking around India in kilts. And you have them being sent to places like where I'm from, St. Lucia. They were sent to St. Lucia in the 1760s when the British won St. Lucia from the French. And the French, out of spite, set all their enslaved people free. And, you know, being like, if we can't have them, you can't, kind of thing. And who do they send to basically round up all these enslaved persons? Sir John Moore, whose statue is in George Square in Glasgow. Abercrombie, who is a naval admiral, I believe. And yeah, and so you have, it's these other people who are literally like round keeping, they're like the policemen of these of these plantation islands. And then specifically Glasgow geographically was was in the place to take part in the slave trade because it's on the west coast of Scotland. It has a harbour, and the river, the Clyde River, comes right in into Glasgow as well. And then you also have Port Greenock, Port Glasgow and Greenock, which are the two basically coastal towns. And so you have, I think we found so far on record about 30 ships that left from Glasgow to go trade slaves on the West African coast.
So these were ships leaving here, but also that may have been built here on the Clyde.
Because Clyde shipbuilding's huge, and I mean, shipbuilding is really a, it continues even post emancipation. Glasgow shipbuilding plays a big part in empire. This is where the empire's ships are built.
Yeah.
This is how basically the Brits get into like the Congo and like Africa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they build the barges here as like prefabricated barges that they can put up easily once they get there. That happens here. That's how they navigate like the Zambezi, and they set up the African lakes company. And so, you know, I mean, this goes far, it's far reaching. But yeah, so I mean, it's,
and then there's also the tobacco industry here, which also the merchant city, and then
so yeah, so I think when people think of Glasgow and slavery, the first thing they think of is tobacco, and you have these people who they call them the tobacco lords. They were the merchants kind of starting around 1740s who basically make all their money from trading, from bringing tobacco in from America, usually the Chesapeake Bay area, into Glasgow. And this tobacco basically went all through Europe as far as Russia. I mean, they supplied Europe with most of their tobacco. And but so you have this being built. That kind of crumbles with the American Revolution. And then you see Glasgow turning more towards sugar. So they kind of, they've always been in the Caribbean, in the West Indies, but after tobacco fails, they kind of, you see a shift in focus more to the West Indies and sugar plantations and cotton plantations also, especially in places like Jamaica, Barbados, Demerara and Berbice in Guyana, and Grenada as well. But actually, they're in all the islands. You can find their presence everywhere. These are just like the main strongholds. I mean, I think they said there was one time where the third of the white population in Jamaica was Scottish. So, I mean, that just goes to show you, and I can tell you, because I was there last summer, and everyone's last name was, it was, I mean, it was like, I don't understand it. It was just, it was very strange. I was like, am I still in Glasgow?
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's, I mean, so there's like a whole other heritage as well.
Yeah.
And so yeah, and so they moved to cotton and sugar, and I mean, they can become fabulously wealthy. And Glasgow, the Glasgow we know today, the built heritage of Glasgow as we know it today, is a direct result from that time period.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Glasgow looked nothing like it did, and then it, before, and then it expanded. And I mean, it's, I think, like, on all the street names that we
want. Yeah, this is what I wanted to ask you about. So talk about those traces in the city. And one, I mean, probably one of the ones that really stands out is Jamaica Street. But there's other, there's many streets and buildings.
So most of the streets' names, at least in the merchant city area of Glasgow, are named after merchants who traded in tobacco, sugar, and who owned plantations. And and I mean, it's Glasford Street, which I point out because I don't know if you've seen the Glasford portrait.
Yeah, we went yesterday at the People's Palace.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, Glasford, he was one of the tobacco lords. And he, I mean, and as in the portrait shows, he had an enslaved African boy in the portrait with him and his family. We've yet to find out who that boy might be. But I did find out a lot about his kind of his whole enterprise. And he was crafty.
Right.
He basically set up these stores all along the Chesapeake Bay rivers, and the tobacco planters would come in and basically trade their tobacco at all these stores along the rivers for either money or European goods. And then they would be shipped, Glasswood would ship them back. And within these stores, he also had slaves working as well. You know, you should find letters of these slave boys who are, they're very well dressed, because they're in the stores, so they're supposed to kind of give this image of, you know, work. And so it's kind of, and interestingly, one of the young African slaves in the stores is named Glasgow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like, so it's not like far to see that, hey, well, it's most likely that one of his factors or agents in America probably sent him this young slave boy that we're seeing in this portrait with him, you know, which was painted in his mansion along the Tron Gate.
And this painting is really fascinating because, of course, it's like he was painted out.
So
right,
while there's
but
a big,
he's sort of, there's this like he's reemerging.
Yes,
it seems.
But there's a whole bunch of, because the official stances, he wasn't painted out. It was the picture was dirty, and they did some conservation and cleaned it, and he kind of reappeared. Some people have different.
Yeah, because there's other. There's also, I was looking at the painting yesterday, and there are figures on the other side that were painted out as well.
There's
so you could,
yes,
like his first wife or something.
Yeah, his
so you
second
could imagine,
wife.
Yeah,
his second wife,
yeah.
Anne, was painted over when he married his third wife.
Oh, his third
Margaret.
Wife. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, but it's just this. I think that painting's been in the collection since the 1950s, and it was only until 2007, I think, that they discovered this. So, and it's kind of become the, you know, the image of like the whole Glasgow and slavery kind of movement.
Yeah, it pops up. Often.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so again, Glasford. So that's just one street name, but then there's all the other street names too. Are of these, and then you have Virginia Street and Virginia Place,
right,
which was that whole block was built by the Buchanans, who are also huge tobacco lords.
Right.
They actually have an estate called Mount Vernon as well. So looking back to,
right,
you know, George Washington's estate. And so, I mean, I think the problem is people don't really connect,
right,
with this. They, I mean, especially when there are people, merchants' names, they're like, okay, it's named after, you know, one of the great men of Glasgow, which we love to say the great people of Glasgow. But what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know.
And it's also, I know Rosie was telling me, Rosie Spooner was telling me about people starting to also look at where, like, the money went into and some of the things in the city that were funded by, or like that, and then after the abolition of slavery and families in the city getting compensation for the loss of slaves, and where that money went into. So it's like it continues to have its tentacles through the city and funding of things, right?
Yes, well, definitely. I mean, so the University of Glasgow, they've been working now and looking at how, like, even the endowments they have today and in other maybe archival or museum collections that were given to the museum, how they've come directly from slavery or slave money, trying to, like, kind of figure out how much of this, you know, and what do we do? How do we move forward with recognizing our role in this, and how do we then give back in some way? And then, yeah, you have, I mean, even GOMA, the Gallery of Modern Art.
Yeah.
It's a plantation owner built that mansion. That was his home.
Right. And the gallery is an extension of the home, right?
So the whole thing. So,
oh, okay.
So it was, if you look at it, you kind of see it's like kind of a two-colored, because they add the columns later. But yeah, this huge mansion. And then it later becomes the Royal Exchange, you know, and they have like sugar and coffee sample rooms in there, you know, and then another reiteration, it becomes the Gallery of Modern Art. And so that's like literally built heritage. And I mean, yeah, they're just, and then with compensation, you talk about, as you know, the British government gave 20 million to the planters to compensate them for the loss of their property, i.e. the enslaved people. And yeah, so if you look on the UCL has a great database now, and you can search, and if you search for, you know, people who owned slaves at the time and how much they were compensated, and you can see that money goes into, especially in Glasgow, a lot of railway stocks. So, you know, when abolition happens in 1834, although the slaves don't get their freedom until 1838, and then you kind of see, oh, well, then it's kind of also the Industrial Revolution is happening, the boom of railways, and you find a lot of the big plantation owners
were just able
in
to
Glasgow, just their money is going into things like Caledonian Railway, British Linen Company, banks, and all, like, I mean, just they're kind of moving all that
they
money,
just moved on to,
yeah, into
to
more
whatever
industrial
was,
yeah. And so you find that you literally see them segueing into this kind of, oh, okay, well, now we're going to do something else.
Yeah.
But that money
is
still
going,
coming from, you know, it just kind of continues down the line. And so it's just, I mean, I think we don't realize how it's like the tentacles of it are everywhere.
And the things just don't end.
No, they
right?
don't.
Yeah.
And you can't really tell the history Glasgow, especially without the history of slavery. And I know it's hard for a lot of people because there wasn't a huge slave population within Scotland itself. There were slaves in Scotland, we know that. But compared to maybe somewhere like London, there wasn't a huge population. And if there was a population, the records just don't really exist other than runaway records.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's very hard to kind of like create a picture of the enslaved life in Scotland, which I think also makes it easy for people to kind of forget, you know. And especially because not many ships left from Glasgow as well, unlike Liverpool or Bristol, where that was a huge enterprise. So it was more of trading with and ownership, but usually ownership of slaves in the colonies and not at home itself.
And do you think it has, we were talking about this with Dr. Charmaine Nelson, who's done all this work on slavery in Canada, that the history of slavery in Canada, people often kind of, even if they're aware of it, will sort of dismiss a bit and say, well, it wasn't as bad as, and then they'll sort of compare it to slavery in the southern U.S., right?
Yes.
Which is often true of people in northern and northeastern United States will be like, well, it wasn't as bad here, but it's still slavery, it doesn't, right? So do you think that's an element too?
Yes, I think a lot of people, and what you get a lot is people saying, oh, well, their lives here are much better than their lives would have been if they were in, on a plantation or if they were back in Africa, which... How could you even say that? You know, but that's something you get all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And it's funny because these are the same kind of justifications slave owners were using to fight emancipation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of sad to say, but you kind of see the same idea. It's like, no. So people definitely want to say it's not as bad. But I think, I don't know, it's just what the sense I get a lot is that people are just so they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. For me, it's very hard to understand why you're so scared. I think they feel guilty or think that like people will blame them. And I'm like, well, you yourself, you weren't a slave owner. But that's not what we're saying. It's about embracing this history and telling it. I mean, we tell stories about Glasgow in so many forms of Scotland every day. But the thing is, it's like it's only part of the story, you know, and. It's hard for me because I see the enslaved person as very much part of Glasgow's story, and so it's very strange for me when I see all these things being told, but there's no talk about slavery. Then I was like, how can that be? And and I just think it actually just makes everything much richer if it was just out in the open and people talked about it, and it was taught in schools more, because when it is taught in schools, it's taught usually about empire, and it's always British Empire, and it's never, they never talk about Scotland's specific role in this, and I think that's what always gets me. It's like, you know, for a place that's so nationalistic, you know, it's, you can't just say, you can't equate Scotland's rule as just the British rule in empire. It's something very specific, which I think is what my research is now kind of looking more at. Kind of like, this, like what does it say about Scotland? What did they do specifically? How is their ideology shaped by this participation in the slave trade?
I think there's this interesting parallel where you talk about people like the abolitionist movement in Scotland was really strong. That's a really great story to identify with as a place.
Exactly.
And so there's this parallel in Canada where people are deeply committed to the Underground Railroad narrative and as the heroes, right? As the North Star and all that.
Yeah.
And then if you start to say, well, hang on, like what happened before? But more important in a certain way is like what happened after. And that's a part that nobody, like people love to tell the Underground Railroad story. But then the fact that so many of the people that did flee north, like immediately went back.
Yeah.
And why was that, right?
Yeah. Well, I think there's like I mean, there's a idea when people think of, you know, the Underground Railroad or like abolition movement, and then they think, oh, emancipation has occurred. Then they think that's the end of the story. Slavery is done.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the toll after that?
Yeah.
And especially here, people are like, well, yeah, you know, that's done. Then Scotland just became this great place for all kinds of people. And I was like, the end of slavery doesn't mean the end of racism.
Yeah.
And people always think that that's it. I'm like, no, how are these people treated?
Yeah.
You know what? And no, there's no one talks about that.
Yeah.
And I think I think we have to kind of change that mindset, because that's a problem.
Yeah.
So people aren't, people, I won't say they don't care about the past, because they do care about the past, but they kind of think that that history is done and over with, because they're unable to see the links of how it affects people of color who live in Scotland today.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like trying to show them these links. Hopefully.
Yeah. It's interesting because a number of the interviews that had done previously, I mentioned with Liza Kirigo, with some artists who were a little bit older but also had family, had personal experience or family talking about issues around the difference between living in the United States and living in Canada, you know, growing up in the 60s and the 70s, and the sense that, like, you it was very clear what the rules were if you were living in Tennessee. But it was very blatant. It was explicitly stated. The great sort of sadness of the Canadian experience was like, well, it wasn't officially stated. On the surface, it was sort of, when it was put out there, like it was, as you were saying about here, like everything's great and
yeah.
everybody's equal. But you knew, right?
Yes.
And many of the artists talk about that, like knowing growing up in Hamilton, where I grew up. Jan Wade talks about, like, we knew we weren't supposed to go to the art gallery. We knew we weren't supposed to go here. That was a given, right?
It's funny that you mentioned going to the art gallery, because
yeah.
I think that's a problem that Glasgow Museum suffers from a lot and that they're trying to change, is the whole idea that who goes to these museums in
mm-hmm.
Glasgow, and when they keep on looking at their numbers,
mm-hmm.
they're not reaching the BME community at all.
Yeah.
And so it's like, why? Why is that?
Yeah.
And it's, I think, so I'm part of like that panel, like advisory panel, and I think it's kind of difficult sometimes for a lot of them to understand. It's not that people, okay, one of the issues is a lot of the stuff there is telling a very specific history, so maybe it may not appeal to another population as much, but that's not even it.
Mm.
It's not even that. It's the fact that you go there and it's like, why? Why are you? You kind of get like a stare,
yeah.
or you get followed by a docent around because you might steal an artifact,
right?
Which is not true at all, but
yeah.
But that's the kind of whole idea. It's like, how do you change that atmosphere,
yeah.
to make people feel like this is a place for everyone?
Yeah.
And well, there's a whole movement now, hopefully, to get a museum opened in
right.
Glasgow.
Yeah, can you talk about that? Because there's been lots of debate in many cities about, do you build a museum or do you not? Like, parallels within Guelph, we were working with a group from Six Nations, which is the Haudenosaunee Reserve nearby. The first residential school was built there. And this real push to preserve the school, to preserve the evidence, to preserve the school, not knock it down because it's so important that the evidence is there. Whereas others are saying, no, like, it's so traumatic, let's just get rid of it. So talk about the idea that of what a museum would do, as opposed, some people might say, well, museums are, you know, they're a kind of a structure or a colonial structure that can you actually do accomplish? What can you accomplish with a museum?
Well, I think with the museum, the whole idea is to make a safe space,
right?
Not a space that excludes anybody, being that if you're not from a minority group you can't come, but just a
mm-hmm.
place where everybody can like really enjoy. And it doesn't have to be in the same what we think of like museum structure,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
It could be more of like a community kind
right.
of center, somewhere to celebrate. I don't know if you guys been to the African American
yeah.
museum,
and
I went there, and like the first thing that struck me was like, there are so many like people of color in the line, which I love museums,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what I do, and I'm literally, usually I'm the only black person in
yeah.
the museum anywhere I go, and this time it was really great, but also it was just all different kinds of people. There was also like a sense of you could be yourself,
right.
people having so much fun
mm-hmm.
in it, you know, there was none of this like quiet reverence walking around looking,
mm-hmm.
it was a celebration of culture, and that's what I really
yeah.
enjoyed, and I think that's what we need here,
yeah,
you know, for people to interact in that kind of in a cultural space and not feel that they have to be confined to what we think museum going should be about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I kind of want to see here, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want it to all be about these strict like
yeah.
exhibitions, but something else.
And you said before too that a lot of the people doing really interesting work here are artists.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, can you talk a little bit about your sort of idea of the role of the artist in that kind of cultural museum space?
Well, I mean, like a lot of some of the artists I mentioned, I mean, a lot of them grew up in Glasgow or Scotland, and a lot of them grew up in multi-ethnic homes, and so they have a very different point of view, which is great. And I think I kind of feel like I think of them like a new future point of view of Glasgow, like
right.
where everyone is kind of like they and their work are kind of a physical embodiment of like all these different cultures coming together, like and all these histories coming together. And so what they're doing is just, to me, I think, is just really inspiring. And I think they are really be the bridge
right.
to bring all these people together in the end, and their work,
because
their performance pieces and their
mm-hmm.
art. I mean, again, so a lot of them are still students, but you can see the seeds there, the ideas,
yeah.
and I'm just hoping that they have the ability to grow.
Yeah.
And it seems like, I mean, the Glasgow art scene is really great. So,
yeah.
I mean, I just have hope for what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to an opening the other night at the Pipe Factory.
Oh, the POC
yeah.
in residence, yeah.
And yeah, like really powerful exhibition, amazing work. And then realized when we left later that we'd only seen a third of the show because
yeah.
there was a lot to work other places.
Yeah,
because
there's some at 16 Nicholson Street is also doing.
Yeah.
yeah, it's at three different places.
But really, I mean, the complexity of the work and what people were using and how they made their work was really
yeah.
quite striking.
No, yeah, those
yeah.
students are, they're lovely.
One more, I guess, question would be like, so where are you headed? You're like a couple. You're almost finished your PhD. Yeah.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Hopefully.
That's.
Thanks.
Yeah. Considering it, I love that story at the beginning of this where you said you applied and an hour later, and then you're on the plane here. Sort of like, I mean, you weren't on a plane an hour later. But so what's your yeah? So you're going to be done soon. What's your hope? Are you planning to stay here in Glasgow, or are you? Where do you see your work taking you?
I'd like to stay here in Glasgow, mainly because my research is so
Glasgow-based.
Yeah. It's like, who else will have me at this point? But I think, I would love to at least lecture part-time, because I think we definitely need to tell this more, too. Because every time I give talks, I ask university students, were you ever taught this in school? And maybe one person puts up their hand.
Right.
So it's like, I would love to, you know, have
yeah.
that to get them thinking about that. But mainly, I really want to see myself in a cultural or museum kind of
right.
space.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Which hopefully is the goal with this whole
yeah.
pushing forward for
yeah.
a museum in Glasgow. But yeah, I mean, even if I'm not in Glasgow itself or in one specific institution, I would just really like to kind of use my work as a jumping off point to create maybe new like smaller exhibitions or collaborating with different kinds of
yeah.
artists and stuff to come up with something, because I mean there's just so many stories that are untold. Like so I come up, just in all my archival research I come up with things that I'm like, oh my god, it has nothing to do with what I'm doing right now.
yeah.
But I mean there's so many hidden stories, I just wish they could be told.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I can't do all of it, so I'm totally willing
yeah.
to share it with people who can maybe put in a different media and
mm-hmm.
run with it and tell those histories.
Well, it'd be great to have you come and visit us in Guelph.
Yes.
And also to have you connect with and meet, you know, more like in person, a number of the scholars and artists that are doing work in a similar
yeah.
area, and hopefully we can help make that connection. And
thanks.
Then, yeah,
because
yeah.
I mean, what you guys have been doing is like basically exactly what I hope to accomplish in Glasgow
yeah.
one day.
Yeah.
So,
well, yeah. thanks so much. It stopped snowing, the sun is out, so we may
thank you
sure.
for having me.
Yeah.